I ask you to pass the House Bill 4654? Are you going to eat her pussy? Yeah, Earl, I'm going to eat her pussy. Hey, yeah. Do you even know how to eat pussy? No, but he did teach me how to eat a butthole.
Appreciate Sally from Williamstown for that very compelling intro. Welcome back to AppPod Latch. My name is Chuck Corum. Joined, as always, by Kelly Pruitt. I told you before that I have a rant about the housing market, and I really just I gotta let it loose. I gotta get it out of my system. So we can just open with this. So we had a house that the owner accepted the offer. We got the inspection done. Expected the inspection to inspect that there was nothing needed to fix that was that big of a deal. I don't know why I thought that was foolish. Really amateur move on my part, I'll admit.
And yeah, fuck you for never buying a house before.
Yeah, fuck me for never buying a house. I guess I should have eaten less avocado toast and not gone to college like everyone told me I had to. Yeah. So
but you did. You did have to go to college to do your job.
I did. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just like...
So they were right.
No, I mean, they were. But I think it was more of like, take out as much money. Don't worry at all about mitigating the cost because it will all pay off. And I don't know fair. Why I thought that was good advice. Anyway, I'm never listening to anyone anymore. So we found this house. It was beautiful. Made an offer. It was right at the tippy top of our budget. So we wanted something that would not require a ton of money to be put into it. And so we got the inspection done. Very thorough, by the way. Very impressive. They did it in like 2 hours. Wild. Anyway, a lot of shit needed to be changed, including all of the pipes and the entire air conditioning unit and the hot water heater. Two of those, which the insurance would not insure the house until they were fixed.
Yeah, that's very pricey.
Yeah, between just those three things, I think the estimate was probably close to $25,000.
Sheesh.
And that's probably on the lower end because it's a Florida air conditioner.
Yeah.
So, which is not something I'd want to pay. And yeah. Instead of, you know, giving us more concessions in the negotiation process, the seller gave us less, in fact, to where it wouldn't even cover any of those. And so we walked. And I think that the thing that grinds my gears about this might be unfair, but I'm going to say it anyway. This was not a property that was a primary residence. It was a rental property that somebody yeah. owned. It was their investment, not their home, not something that they, you know, raised their children in. Yeah. They had the little marks on the wall to see how high they got. This was just a money-making machine. And it got yeah. me thinking just about how angry I am at the world, but mostly at Wall Street hedge funds and investment firms for buying up all the single-family homes in America, basically.
Yeah.
Not that I don't think this is an investment firm owned property, but it just got me thinking about that and how absurd and insane that is. And so yeah. that's why the home buying process is so difficult and expensive right now, partly yeah. a big part of why. And I mean, like, I'm telling you that the houses we're looking at, they are overpriced. That's just yeah. the reality. Like, they sold for, you know, $100,000 or more less 5 years ago. And this yeah. is not a fluke. This is just happening everywhere. It's absurd.
Yeah. I mean, I think our house value has gone up significantly just in the last year and a half that we've had it.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Because I think everywhere, like even West Virginia, where housing is significantly cheaper, it still feels like there's a shortage of housing. And I know that in other areas, I mean, we've talked about this, like Asheville, touristy places like Florida that have, there's so much incentive to, if you have money, just buy another house and rent it. Like, there's incentive to do that in vacation destinations, like, you know, like Florida and beaches and like Asheville and the mountains. And I just feel like that is such a huge barrier for entry.
It sucks. Yeah. It's like the biggest. And plus, those places that are touristy also have the detrimental effect of there being a lot of investment properties that are turned into Airbnbs or rental units.
Yeah.
Like the Smokies being in Sevier County, Tennessee, being one of the biggest. And I'm sure Asheville as well.
Oh yeah, but Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, there's nowhere worse than that, really. Like yeah, in the mountains.
I'm pretty sure it's ground zero.
Yeah, it's that's like so so bad. All the cabins there are either owned by investment firms or owned by families that rent them out. Well, I'm really sorry that the house fell through. And fuck house hunting, because that is not.
It's fair. Okay. It's fine. It wasn't meant to be. We'll find another place. It's just, it's been a wild ride, man. And here we go again. Yeah. But that's all. People don't need to hear about my griping about trying to buy a house.
Well, I have some news that will fire you up in a different way, I think.
Oh, no.
So.
Oh, no.
One of your absolute favorite all-time Appalachian characters is back in the headlines. Don Blankenship, Chuck, is running for Senate.
Favorite character, hell of a way to describe that toe fungus.
Yeah. Wow, that's so accurate.
I fucking hate this guy.
Yeah.
I've said it many times and I will say it until my dying breath. I fucking hate this guy.
Can I blow your mind? Yes.
Blow it. Blow it. Why not?
He's running as a Democrat.
Oh, of course he is. Of course.
Oh,
why? Who the
boy.
Fuck knows?
So, for those of y'all who haven't been able to hear Chuck rant about Don Blankenship, I can't wait. But just as a little bit of a backstory here, before Chuck kind of gets into his, I mean, very righteous rant that you're about to hear. Don Blankenship is like a coal baron. He's a notorious union buster. And he went to prison for a year because he ignored safety violations in his mines. And there was a mine disaster that killed over 24 people in West Virginia. I'm sure that most of you were around when this happened, and a lot of our listeners were around when the trial was going on. Chuck,
I would love to. I'd love to remind people what a terrible person this guy is, because you know it hasn't been that long. It actually has been long enough for people to forget if they weren't paying attention. It's actually been almost, God, it'll be 14 years this April, which makes me feel so old. Awesome. I was in my sophomore year of college.
Yeah, 14 years ago, I was in high school, and I remember this vividly happening. Wow. I am getting really old.
It's a depressing slog into elderly age. I don't know. It's oblivion. That's perfect. That's perfect.
Oblivion
would be nice place to cast Don Blankenship into, completely undeserving. When I say that, and I said this on Twitter, but I think it bears repeating, that I would rather remove my own spleen without anesthesia using a scalpel pulled from the inside of the Chernobyl elephant foot than vote for this demon. I am not joking. That is not a joke.
That's powerful words.
It is true. That's how
I believe
bad of
it.
A person he is. And look, I highly unlikely that he'll win or even win the nomination. I hope. I don't want to speak too
you
soon.
You have more faith than I do.
I don't want to speak too soon because, look, he's very similar to Jim Justice, who's the front runner.
Yeah.
So Blankenbitch is a notorious union buster, known for repeatedly ignoring safety violations in his mines. He used to be the CEO of Massey Energy, which was one of the largest coal producers in West Virginia and probably the country at the time. He is probably the quintessential example of the worst type of boss. A coal baron.
Yeah, in the modern era, for
yeah,
sure.
And just in general. I mean, because he operated his mines like a 1920s era coal baron. So, what Callie mentioned before, the end of his reign resulted in the explosion of the Upper Big Branch mine in Raleigh County, West Virginia, that killed 29 miners. How did we get there, you ask? Well, it's very important that we talk about it. The Upper Big Branch mine was known for being a notorious place to work. It was cited thousands of times for safety violations from the Mine Safety Health Administration, MSHA. In 2009 alone, it racked up more than $2 million in fines. So the year before this explosion happened, it had $2 million worth of fines. Just that one mine.
Yeah. I can't imagine. It seems like they had to have a staffer for the safety board just for this mine to issue thousands of tickets.
I'm sure they did. And I mean, everybody knew about it. It was a well-known non-kept secret.
It was an open secret. Yeah.
So, in like his view, his mentality, his philosophy on all this was that they're bullshit. These safety violations are bullshit. It's nonsensical rules from the federal government. He has a disdain for the government and regulations. That's something that is a constant theme in his life. He said, quote, unions, communities, people, everybody's going to have to learn to accept that capitalism from a business viewpoint is survival of the most productive. And the way that you become.
At least he's honest.
Oh, he's honest. And his view is the way that you become most productive is to kill all the unions. Yeah. And in some respects, that's absolutely true. But being the most productive also means being the most putrid, wretched, and dangerous. There's a 1986 film that documented his role in crushing striking miners at Massey Energy Operations in Appalachia. Blankenship was frank about his goals to destroy unionization in order to sell coal cheaper. He said, quote, what that means is that non-union competitors have a tremendous advantage and therefore they sell coal cheaper and drive union coal operations out of business. That was his entire business philosophy is fuck the unions.
Wow.
And in many cases, it was at least reported that he would fire workers for trying to unionize or if he found out that they were union, even though that's very illegal. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Didn't matter. I don't know where, like, I know that there was some oversight on this, like with the violations and stuff, but there had, it just is a case in point of where, like, these penalties are not enough.
Yeah, there are enormous gaps in this story for where there should have been punitive action taken, and there was
not. And this is 2010. I mean, some of the regulations and things may have changed since. I'm sure they have, at least to some extent. I have not really kept up with it. But back then, I mean, this is a huge problem. By 2010, Blankenship had largely driven unionization out of his mines. Only about 1.8% of Massey Energy's workforce was unionized at that point. In the same year that this exploded. And in 2007, the NLRB, National Labor Relations Board, determined that Massey's refusal to hire union workers was illegal. So this was known that they did this. They still were allowed to operate, though. So, on April 5th, 2010, there was an explosion at the Upper Big Branch mine that killed 29 miners, like we said. MSHA concluded that flagrant safety violations contributed to the explosion, and at the time of the explosion, it had issued 369 violations and assessed $10.8 million in penalties.
Wow. I mean, did they conclude that had they addressed those issues that it would not happen? Is that what happened in the trial?
I don't know that that was the exact verbiage. I don't know that they can conclude to, like, 100% certainty, but I mean, so the findings from the investigation showed that there were high methane levels, and the methane ignited and caused the explosion. Anybody that knows how methane works, one spark lights up the whole thing. That's why it's so dangerous. Mm-hmm. They faulted Massey for a failure to properly maintain its ventilation system, which allowed all the methane to increase and accumulate to a dangerous level. That's the kind of thing that should have been fixed. And I believe that they were cited for is the ventilation systems.
Yeah.
That's something where this is the problem with this system is it's cheaper to pay the fine and just ignore the problem rather than fix it. And that was the entire mentality.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they'll fine him, you know, a couple thousand, $100,000 or whatever for this ventilation problems. But that doesn't mean that they're like required to fix it, at least at the time. And that was a huge problem. So that's really, I mean, that was the big thing that caused it. And, you know, I mean, that's how they operate. And this is not, like, unique to him. Jim Justice did the same thing. He had the same type of business mentality. It's just that he had the fortunate luck of not having a mine explode, or else he would not have a political career at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is a great place to turn to the two of them and to turn to the race.
Well, one thing I wanted to mention just before we get off this
sure,
is
sorry.
That union mines operate safer, and that's a fact. From 2002 to 2010, less than one-fifth of the total mine worker fatalities occurred in a unionized mine, and the reason is simple, is that they are not afraid to report unsafe working conditions. If they reported unsafe working conditions at a Blankenship mine, they risked being fired and the livelihood of their family up in smoke.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So, getting to the political angle of all of this, Blankenship has run for Senate before. If you'll recall, he ran in 2018 as a Republican in the Republican primary. So this is a stark change to where we last left this person in kind of the story of his life. So last week when this broke, reporter Brad McElhaney spoke to Blankenship, and Blankenship told him that he registered as a Democrat and said that while he is regularly in West Virginia, the rules of running for Senate require the support of citizens rather than a standard proof of residency. So not only is he running as a Democrat, which he's never been before, he admitted to the reporter that he doesn't live in West Virginia and wants to win the votes of West Virginians. The same reporter asked if he would be willing to caucus with Chuck Schumer, who, as we know, he's the head of the Democrats in the Senate. And Blankenship said that he would be unlikely to caucus with the senators of either party. Would be really tough because there's only one senator sitting in the United States Congress that is not a Democrat or a Republican. And he's an independent and caucuses with the Democrats.
It's Bernie Sanders, for anybody wondering.
No, Angus King.
Bernie's still a independent, though, right?
I thought that he changed it to a Democrat to run for president.
I don't remember now. I mean, I think maybe he had to, but I thought he changed it back. I could be wrong. But yes, you're right. Angus,
another pro-union guy.
Great name.
So he said that the official party apparatus is not Angus King. This is back to Blankenship. Said that the party apparatuses of each were unethical criminal operations. The main Republican candidates for Senate in West Virginia that are opposing right now, there are three Democratic candidates on the ballot. One is the Wheeling mayor, one is Zach Shrewsbury, and now Blankenship are in the Democratic primary. And Jim Justice and Alex Mooney are kind of the main players for the Republican primary. So Blankenship's had some mild criticisms of both of the Republicans, said that he would be happy to debate either. Where I think that this is really interesting is that just last week, Republicans slated the 2026 primary to be a closed primary for the parties. Right now, if you're a registered independent or a Democrat, you can vote in the Republican primary if that's what you choose. You just can't vote in both. So it's a closed primary, but it's an open primary now. They've just changed it to a closed primary, meaning that if what Blankenship is doing right now is trying to just like fuck up the Democratic ticket and mess that up, that a lot of Republicans might go and vote on the Democratic ticket, register as Democrats, and then go vote for Blankenship to blow that up. That is like kind of what people are talking about, is if it's going to be a Justice Blankenship kind of getting two coal-bearing candidates on the ballot by doing it this way, because he's not a Democrat.
Just the worst imaginable situation I could possibly even fathom is having those coal baron pieces of shit.
Yeah, I mean, because Blankenship can mount a real campaign, whereas Zach and the Wheeling mayor are not raising a lot of money. They're not able to mount real campaigns that are, you know, capable of operating at the level that needs to operate for a United States Senate race. So it's
not that we've seen yet, anyway.
Not that we've
seen
yet.
You know, there's not a lot of time left. But if you do want to see any of them mount a viable campaign, go donate to their campaign. By God, at least help them beat Blankenship.
Yeah. So that's what I'm worried about, is that Blankenship will come in as he'll sell himself as the new Joe Manchin. But he's not Joe Manchin. I'm just going to say, like, Don Blankenship is way worse than Joe Manchin, in my mind.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, like, to come in and have this aggressive campaign to try and sneak onto the Democratic ticket, which, I mean, it's a pretty good plan, and it's really terrifying.
Yeah, he got almost 20% of the vote in the Republican primary in 2018 when Patrick Morrissey and Evan Jenkins ran. Jenkins got almost 30, so, like, there was a big difference between those two, but that's a Republican primary. And what scares me is that people may see the name Blankenship. They may not fully understand what he brings to the table. And since he's got a lot more name recognition than any of the other Democrats on the ballot, that is concerning. I hope for the good people of West Virginia that they don't do that. And I think that the Democratic Party has already come out and been like, no, fuck this. I hope that that's the case. And I hope that, that he doesn't get any traction. But it is concerning to me. It is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And the party's not, they're not coordinating currently with either of the other candidates. So, like, in a primary, parties usually don't get involved.
Yeah.
So for the Democratic Party of West Virginia to come out and say that that's bullshit is really good. But at the same time, I think that a lot of people who would vote for somebody like Blankenship in a primary won't be swayed by that. I think that they are the kind of people who want to see a break it and put rebuild it candidate. They're the same people who would vote for a Manchin, or the people who voted, like, what I, who I'm thinking of are like the Barack Obama, Donald Trump voters, who are like, shake up the system and make people really work for it. And all that, I think there's a strong tendency in the electorate in West Virginia to do that. And so that's what is so scary, is that so many of these voters who don't care about the Democratic Party are going to say, yeah, Blankenship's giving them the middle finger. They need to be, they need to fix their shit anyway. So I'm going to vote for him.
Yeah, I mean, the Democratic Party coming out against him may actually work in his favor because there's not like, there's a lot of anti-establishment mentality, not a lot of love for the Democratic Party. Yeah, I can 100% see that happening. So, I hope not.
You'll be hearing more about this from us for sure.
Yeah, so if you're listening, tell all your friends to never vote for this man. And also, just to be clear, it's a good thing that the party came out against him. Just to be clear. Hey everyone, Valentine's Day is coming up, and you're going to be getting a lot of pressure from people to get them something nice. Now, I know what you're thinking. Chuck, you have no idea what we could possibly want to get for our loved one. And you're wrong. And I know, it's not a diamond ring, it's not a trip to Disney World, it's not a fireplace bellow, it's not a subscription to our Patreon, or maybe it is. Hey, you know, who's to say? It's Red Rooster Coffee, straight out of Floyd, Virginia. We love Red Rooster, and they're back this Valentine's Day with the Lovebirds blend. I'm so pumped to check this out. They're celebrating all things to love. Their Lovebirds blend is available for a limited time, perfect for gifting or sharing with your Valentine. This lovely cup has a silky medium body with a sweetly floral Roman effervescent acidity. I love the word effervescent because it makes me sound smart when I say it. I don't know what it means, but I do know that Red Rooster wouldn't say it if they didn't mean it. Look for notes of raspberry, creamy milk, chocolate, sweet tarts, and white wine. Hell yeah. All right. You can use our promo code Dolly, D-O-L-L-Y, at checkout to get free shipping. That's a pretty dope deal, if you ask me. And you're going to go to redroostercoffee.com, check them out. They're local. They're sustainably sourced. It's not any of that other big box bullshit you're going to find, I don't know, in your local Target or something that has that kind of mermaid logo type thing on it. Certainly not the biggest coffee company in the world. No siree. Check out Red Rooster Coffee. Support a local Appalachian business. Even if you don't got a honey, treat yourself. You don't need to have somebody else in your life for Valentine's Day. You are enough. And Red Rooster will help you feel even more whole.
Nothing's getting better as far as politics in West Virginia goes, so yeah.
Things are continuing to slide.
It is, and it's through lots of utterings of the phrase
eat pussy.
Shouted in the state house.
Yeah. Book banning is authoritarian bullshit. We've said it once, we'll say it again. It's stupid. It solves nothing. And it is only used to suppress speech and free expression of thought. Also, the internet exists, you fucking idiots.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's really the bottom of the barrel on this, is that the internet is a thing. And also, like, audiobooks and the Apple Store.
Yeah, no, if kids want to get their hands on hardcore porn, I can tell you that they're not going to a public library or a school for that.
Yeah.
They will go to Google and search.
Pornhub is free.
Not hard to find. Yeah. It's a hallmark of the internet. And so, and it's in your pocket now, folks. Come on. Like, this is the thing that really drives me insane, because it's like we're backsliding into oblivion here. And in West Virginia, there's a debate going on right now about a book banning law. They don't call it book banning, but it is. So we're going to probably do an entire episode on book banning at some point. But we can't not talk about how much pussy was eaten at the West Virginia legislature. Metaphorically speaking, because I'm sure that most of them have no idea how to pleasure a woman there. That's neither here nor there. This, hey, boom, nailed it.
Boom.
Mm-hmm. Looking at you, entire GOP caucus. Anyway, this past week, your esteemed Republican representatives in the West Virginia House, the people tasked with being good stewards of taxpayer money, who are entrusted with writing laws for the great state, decided that a top priority would be making libraries, schools, and museums criminally liable for distribution of obscene materials to minors. Now, on the face, sounds reasonable, right? Yeah, we don't want obscene materials for minors being distributed by these important public institutions. Don't want porn in front of them, but as with most things with Republican state representatives, they aren't what they seem. And this is designed to suppress learning and ban books, because what they consider to be obscene material is a wide array of things that, if you look at it, tends to just target LGBTQ content and anything that even remotely mentions the word sex or any type of sexual activity. Which, newsflash to all of you, you hit puberty in your early teens, and I can tell you one thing, like, it hits like a fucking freight train if you're a guy, and you are going to get your hands on worse stuff, let's be honest. And you can't just avoid the topic of sex. You just can't. That's what leads to unintended pregnancies and diseases and all the bad stuff that can come from it.
Yeah, yeah. Though, but they think that if you don't talk about it, then kids won't know what to do, and therefore all the children will be safe if we just don't say any words about sex.
Oh, yeah. They just magically stop being horny. That's what happens.
Yeah. They would rather that their children be like Barbie and Ken dolls.
Yeah, and not have any reproductive organs whatsoever.
Well, mostly just the girls. I think that men would be really, they want their sons to have big dicks. I do think that most men in America, they're like, yeah, that's my boy.
It's really a double standard for women, for sure. They would rather that they don't have any of that until right at the moment that it's time for them to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing about pleasure. No, of course not. So this is something that's happening throughout the country. Currently, public libraries are exempt from obscenity laws in West Virginia, including public libraries, museums, schools. And Brandon Steele, Republican representative of Raleigh County, believes that there are gay books in the libraries, and he, for one, will not stand for it.
Brave Brandon.
What a... let's go, Brandon. So brave. So brave. He's standing up to the gay agenda.
I'm wondering, though, if he read that stuff, did that make him gay?
It did, probably, for a minute, and then, you know, he had to take a cold shower and watch UFC.
Rinse the gay away, yeah, okay.
Yeah, rinse it away. Brandon Steele, in many ways, is the gay agenda. Well, the anti-gay agenda, anyway.
I mean, Brandon Steele does sound like the lead character in, like, a gay erotic novel. It sounds like all of the Mothman novels, like, it's every main character of those.
you have come up with a great idea. I think that we should get in touch with Chuck Tingle, the guy who, if you will recall, wrote all the Mothman erotica, and he should write one about
Chuck
every
Tingle.
Single Republican representative that is
we need
proposing
you. Your country
to ban
needs
books.
You.
Chuck Tingle, if you're listening. Your country needs you.
I write us some spicy shit about these men.
Or anybody listening. Truthfully, I'm actually really going to fixate on this idea because I think this is perfect. I think that any...
And I'll put it in the Kanawha County Public Library.
Absolutely.
I'm going
to
put it in there.
Absolutely. And we'll also read it on this show and encourage people to buy it. Even if you want to write it and just have it read on this show and we'll boost on social media, write an erotic poem about these people. Preferably, if they're homophobic, make them gay. I don't know. And that's that. And I'm saying that as someone who supports gay rights, and it's not to bash gay people or anything. It's just to really stick it to these bigots.
There's, you know, it's not us that will be feeling any sense of shame for writing such a thing, reading such a thing. It will be them that feels such a sense of shame, and hopefully. It will
I hope so.
Mind.
I really do. So if anybody out there wants to give it a shot, please do. Send your poetry, your prose, your short stories to info@appodlatcha.com. We will read it on this show. But if you're wondering, though, why we're talking about all this pussy stuff, it's because at a public hearing, they held a public hearing at the West Virginia legislature this past week for this very bill. It prompted many people to come forward in defense and opposition to the bill, including an old mamma named Sally, who read from the book Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. And that is where I'll just play the audio from it, because it's better if she reads it.
And I ask you to pass the bill, the House Bill 4654. This is an insert from a book called Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. It's in Williamstown, Parkersburg High School, in Parkersburg South. Are you going to eat her pussy? Yeah, Earl, I'm going to eat her pussy. Hey, yeah, do you even know how to eat pussy? Papa Gaines never sat you down, said, son, one day you're going to have to eat the pussy. No, but he did teach me how to eat a butthole. God bless that man. Yup. I would teach you some pussy eating techniques, but it's a little complicated. Son, I don't have time for that. I got like 20 pussies over here that I need to eat. Is that right? I'm on pussy deadline. You've got 20 vaginas all lined up in a row. Ah, what the hell? What the hell? No, one's talking about vaginas. Greg, what the hell is wrong with you, man? That's nasty. I'm talking about pussy. I got a lot of little honey mustard over here, a little Heinz 57, and a whole lot of pussy. This is not what I want my kids and my grandkids to find in libraries. I want my kids to know how, my grandkids to know how to do math, writing, and arithmetic. Let's get real here.
Amazing.
So that was Sally talking about eating pussy and butthole. Really, truly incredible stuff. Look, I get that some parents would find that alarming, but there are books that talk about sex. Get over it. It's part of life. It's part of growing up. I remember reading The Chocolate War when I was in eighth grade, and it talked about a bunch of dudes jerking off. And I'm like, that's weird, but okay. And I moved on with my life.
I mean, it's part of human experience. When you're a teenager, you're supposed to start understanding human experience. And I think that's why so many people are so insecure in their sexuality, so unable to talk to, like, unable to obtain consent. They think that's weird and not sexy to get consent. You know, this is, like, why these books are, they should be made publicly available. I don't know. I have very strong feelings that teens need to read about this stuff to understand, like, because college is going to be a real scary place if you don't know anything about what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I think that it needs to be an open part of growing up, like the discussion about it, because if you repress it, if you suppress it and repress it, then that is not going to do any good. It's only going to harm the kid. Now, I understand that there's ways of presenting it that are
appropriate,
better and more helpful than others. That's fine. And like that can be a discussion. But the problem with this is it all comes from this like self-righteous, often like right-wing religious ideology that couches this stuff in terms of, oh, it's bad. It's bad for them to be learning this. Yeah. God forbid.
In a young adult novel, like, that's the thing. This novel, Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl is not a novel for 11-year-olds. It's for young adults. Mm-hmm. And that's what bothers me about this, is that nobody is arguing that we talk to our toddlers about eating pussy.
Yeah, like, no, not arguing that at all.
No one is arguing that. This book, though, is widely known to be a really great book for teenagers and to be a really helpful book. Or even just entertaining. Like, it doesn't have to be educational to be entertaining. Like, I read books with sex in it. I don't know. I have strong feelings that folks who are on this train really have missed the entire point of democracy and liberalism.
Yep, they have. Also, they're just nitpicking parts of that book in order to reinforce the narrative that they want to get across, which is great because that's what we're doing in this game that I created called Bible, Bigots, or Banned.
I'm very excited for this game. I've not seen it. I don't know anything about it except for that I'm guessing maybe which one of those something goes.
You are I'm gonna give you a quote and you're gonna tell me whether it came from the Bible, okay, whether it came from somebody who is a bigot wanting to ban books, okay, or whether it came from a banned book.
Okay, all right,
so most likely it's gonna be the Bible, a banned book, or a politician.
Okay,
all right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Question number one, or quote number one rather. Quote, people aren't allowed to say what's really on their minds for fear of upsetting people, end quote.
That's a politician. Do you want me to guess which politician?
Sure, if you want.
Ron DeSantis.
Incorrect. It's from the banned book, This Book is Gay.
Oh!
Sorry, well, that, you know, it certainly sounds reasonable.
That was very hard. Yeah. You said this one was going to be harder than normal. So, well, first question already really hard.
Ron DeSantis banned that book too. So, you know, seems like it might go against his anti-woke ideology. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think that Ron DeSantis needs to take a beat.
Maybe he needs to read a gay book once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one, quote, there she lusted after her lovers, whose genitals were like that of a donkey's and whose cum was like that of a horse's.
It's got to be a banned book, right?
Incorrect.
What?
That is the Bible. It's
no,
Ezekiel.
It's not.
Ezekiel 23:20. The only word I changed was something to come. I think it was expulsions.
Wow.
Because let's just
be honest.
I didn't think
that cum was going to be in the Bible. I really did.
In fairness, it wasn't, but it was a reference to it, so.
Totally fair. That was a misdirection, and it was misdirection.
This is the Charles Cora translation, so this is the modern version. Nothing else was changed, though. Lusting after genitals and donkeys. Basically, amazing. It's saying that.
Bring me that donkey dick.
Yeah, it's the one being like, man, I really want his big donkey dick and all of his cum. That's what it's saying, but the Bible, are they going to ban the Bible now because of this?
My guess would be no.
No? Okay. Are you sure? Because I think in Gender Queer, they talked about a blowjob once.
Well, fuck.
They were gay, though.
That makes a big difference.
I think they were gay. They weren't straight. That's all I know. Ezekiel.
All I know is that they weren't straight. Does that admit that there's a spectrum of sexuality?
I have never read Gender Queer. All I know is that it talks about a blowjob, and Republicans don't like it because of that.
Yeah, they hate it.
But perhaps it's because it's not a straight blowjob, because this is talking about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so we know there's some hypocrisy here. Let me go to the next one, which is, quote, show that some of the folks, read slaves, eventually parlayed being a blacksmith into doing things later in life.
That's got to be a politician, a Republican politician.
You are correct. It was a little confusing the way I worded it, but yes. And do you want to take a guess at who?
Nikki Haley.
Close. Very close. Good guess. It's Ron DeSantis, actually.
God damn it! I didn't want to. I didn't want to guess. guess him again.
That's okay. I mean, look, she probably said something similar. This was in response to the school curriculum in Florida being updated to talk about the benefits of slavery. Very important, of course.
Yeah.
And he said that it shows that some of the folks eventually parlayed being a blacksmith into doing things later in life. So, oh, the important skills that you develop while being a piece of property to a rich white person actually was good, important skill building to further your accumulation of capital.
I mean, that tracks with him. And it's just, it's not even disappointing at this point. I'm just,
It's just par for the course.
It is.
But don't you dare talk about gay. If this is about a gay slave, then no.
Oh, there weren't any gay slaves, remember?
That's
because
right.
There
yes,
were
true.
No gay people back then. And we now are turning people gay, just like left-handed people were turned loose in the early 20th century. And look at the havoc that they've wreaked.
I swear to God, I am so tired of these lefties.
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck them all. Yeah, you're right. I forgot there weren't any gay people in the 1800s. That all started when hippies came around, I think.
No, it was definitely Ellen.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No, it wasn't the Greeks. It wasn't Benjamin Franklin and his orgies. It was Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
All right, number four. Quote, look, I have two daughters who have never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you, and you can do whatever you want with them. End quote.
Is that the Bible?
Correct, it's the Bible.
Oh God, that's awful.
Genesis chapter 19, verse 8.
Who says that?
Oh, I don't know. Some guy.
Some guy.
I don't think
some
it's
guy
Jesus.
In Genesis.
Some dude just looking to
sell
get
his daughters.
Late, I guess. I don't know. That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Also, just like the idea of, you know, sending your two daughters out to participate. There's some incest there, some light incest, implied incest.
Yeah, very heavily, or at least like just some weird, like on
weird
the
shit.
Border of incest there, on the verge, which is, again, apparently approved of by the likes of Ronald DeSantis and the like, so... I guess that goes because, again, not gay. It does involve two girls, though.
But that's okay. That's all right.
If they're hot,
girls,
then it's
girls
fine.
Girls kissing is hot. That's, yeah. That's
as
okay.
long as
and
they're
it's
hot.
Not gay.
Not gay as long as they're hot. That's number five, graceful deer, may her fat natural tits satisfy you always. End quote.
A banned book.
No, I'm sorry. It's the it's the Bible, but I changed a little bit of it. Mm. I'm sorry. That was it's graceful deer. May her breasts satisfy you always.
Wow. May they. That what a blessing.
But it tells you how changing the verbiage can change the interpretation.
Mm-hmm,
totally. But it's still the same thing.
It is. This is you're proving a very good point here.
Thank you. Next one, but if people aren't allowed to say what's really on their minds for fear of upsetting people, we'll end up never saying anything at all.
Is that the same book from the beginning?
Damn, it is. That's this book is gay.
Yes.
Very good. Very good.
I'm feeling strong and powerful and smart.
You should. You should. Okay, this is another quote. My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door, and my bowels were moved for him.
Oh my! Oh my!
Yeah, a lot of interpretation there.
I mean, I think I can interpret it pretty clearly.
You you want to take a guess at what that was? Was it a banned book? Was it the Bible? Or was it a Republican politician? And I will repeat.
It's got to be the Bible.
You are correct. That's Songs of Solomon.
Yeah. And it's about anal sex, right?
I believe.
Be.
Well, at least it's butt play of some sort. My beloved put his hand by the hole of the door.
By the hole of the door, which has to be the vagina, right? God, this is going to be so... I cannot believe we're talking about this on a podcast.
And my bowels were moved for him. I'm sorry. We can cut it if you want.
No, it's fine. I mean, I think people will understandably know why I'm so confused.
I'm just like, if you don't want a double standard, then ban the Bible.
No, it's true. It's true. I think that what this is establishing is if you read pieces of the Bible out and you actually look and see what it means, it's easy to just breeze past stuff like that. If you don't really look at what it means, you could be like, I don't get that. I'll just go on to the next part. I'll understand Jesus, something that Jesus said. But then you actually look at what this is and you're kind of shocked by it.
Look, in lots of Songs of Solomon, very beautiful. It talks about lovemaking in a very kind, gentle-hearted way at some points. Or that, which is also fun. It shows that people like to get down in different ways, and there's nothing wrong with that. We don't kink shame the Bible.
Nothing wrong with that. It's just that when you read it out, saying that there's, like, trying to figure out what the Bible means, there's definitely some questions there.
I wish somebody, and maybe they did and I don't know, would have gotten up at the West Virginia State House and read these quotes and then made the call to ban the Bible.
I wish that I would have thought of that before the hearing, because that would just be gold.
Well, if this goes into law, then, like, do it. You know, like, go and be like, well, this is obscene material, and I'm going to press charges if it's found in my library. Except don't do that, because we don't want the librarians to... I'm just, you can make a scene out of it,
I don't want to get in trouble. I think I would make a scene out of it. I think that's something that I should do.
The last one, it's probably going to be pretty easy. Transgenderism is a mental disorder called gender identity disorder.
Well, that's definitely a politician.
Correct. Which one? I don't think you'll get this one. It's pretty tough.
Is it the head of the West Virginia Republican Party?
No, unfortunately, it's not. It's Representative Susan Lynn, a Republican from Tennessee, who sponsored a bill that effectively tried to ban books and also was the first to introduce the bathroom bill in Tennessee.
Well, fuck
real dark her. Horse there. Yeah, well, fuck her. She sucks. She's an idiot.
What a game. I learned some things.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel better about our democracy, but, you know, it was fun.
Yeah, I'm just generally in a state of panic about our democracy, but that's okay. We're working to change it. Boy.
I'm with you. Well, and it doesn't get much better when we go to Under the Radar.
It doesn't. It really doesn't get any better.
Hi, everyone. Just wanted to give you a quick plug for our Patreon, patreon.com/apodlatcha. You can join for as little as a dollar a month. It helps fund the operations of this podcast. And if you join, you get access to exclusives, bonus features. If you're in our $10 tier and above, we put out the video of this episode every single week. If you're in the $5 or $1 tier and above, you'll get access to bonus exclusive segments and exclusive series. We're currently doing one on the Harlan Cole Wars, Bloody Harlan. It's really interesting. Excited to do part two here in an upcoming week. So check that out, if you will, www.patreon.com/apodlatcha, and help support the show. It really means a lot to us and helps us keep the lights on, quote unquote. All right, well, let's get into the Under the Radar, because it's a pretty harrowing one. I know this is a heavy episode this week, folks. I am sorry.
This is one that I have been following, because I follow a lot of capital punishment stories. It's one of the policy areas that I am most interested in. And just to show my resolve on this issue, I feel so strongly about the death penalty that I have a signed and notarized letter stating that if I am brutally murdered in some way, that it would be my will as the victim for the prosecution and the defense for the prosecution and the judge to not pursue the death penalty, because I think it is so barbaric. So just saying that, to open
commitment.
This up. Yes, it's commitment. So
that's not an open invite to murder Callie.
It's not an open invite. That would be, I can't, you know, maybe Danny will accidentally lose it. I'll be dead. I won't know. So This is about capital punishment in Alabama, and specifically the murder, killing, state-sponsored killing, there we go, state-sponsored killing of Kenneth Smith this last week, who has been going through the motions and procedures of being murdered by the state for years on end. On November 17th, 2022, Kenneth survived the state's attempt to execute him for the first time by lethal injection. This was the third botched or failed execution in Alabama in 2022. So these are torturous events. Lethal injection, if done incorrectly, is incredibly painful. And is the testimony from people who have survived it is harrowing. However, this past Thursday, Smith was successfully killed and pronounced dead at 8:25 p.m. Central Time at the correctional facility where he was in Atmore, Alabama. This is almost three decades after he was convicted of a murder-for-hire plot in 1988 of Elizabeth Sennett, who was a preacher's wife. Many people think that because of her identity, that he received even harsher punishment, that a murder for hire plot in other ways, you know, has not gone in this direction. Yet again, this just illustrates how arbitrary the death penalty is given out. So his religious advisor, Reverend Jeff Hood, who witnessed the execution, told reporters that what he saw was a quote, man struggling for their life for a staggering 22 minutes from curtain open to curtain close. It was 22 minutes. The White House condemned the execution on Friday, saying it's very troubling to us as an administration. It's very troubling here at the White House. Why would the White House put out a statement like this is the big question. And the answer to that question is that Alabama used a previously untested, never before used method of killing him, which through nitrogen hypoxia, which is suffocating somebody by basically just strapping a nitrogen mask to their face that you can breathe it in and not giving their brain any oxygen. So you suffocate to death. It's never been tested before. Many, many experts think that it's cruel and unusual. And so for 22 minutes, this man suffocated to death. Alabama authorities insisted that the execution went according to plan, despite predicting the untested method would lead to him being unconscious within seconds and death within minutes. That was what the promise was at the beginning, but that's not what happened. He was shaking and writhing on the gurney for several minutes. We didn't see somebody go unconscious in 30 seconds, said Reverend Hood. What we saw was minutes of someone dying. The Supreme Court did not step in at the 11th hour, and Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who wrote the dissent, said that they used Smith as a guinea pig of this untested, unproven method of murder. And so I wanted to bring this to the forefront because that is incredibly disturbing, the story in general. Capital punishment is disturbing, but doing it in a new way that is illegal to use on animals is something that I just feel like we have to address and talk about.
It's Jesus. This is awful. I will never understand people that are for capital punishment, but then claim to be like, oh, I hate big government. Because to me, like, what's bigger government than when the government decides to kill you and authorizes your killing? That's big government at its finest.
Yeah.
That's what I've never understood about that kind of mentality. And it's just, I think there's, from a practical standpoint, the arguments for capital punishment are, like, so minimal. It's usually because of retribution or because of vengeance or because people feel like they're getting, you know, closure or something. If it's like someone murdered their loved one or something like that, which, like, I can't put myself into those people's shoes. I don't know how that feels, but it's usually like with this case, when was that murder? It was like the 80s, right? Yeah, so, you know, 30 fucking years later. So you're not actually, so like from the fiscal conservative standpoint, yeah, it's a wash.
Yeah,
you've already incarcerated this person for the majority of their life. They are spending tons of money appealing. So there's no fiscal argument for it either. So that's complete bullshit as well. I think it's driven by human emotion, and that should never be how we make policy decisions about people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the main reasons that people say that they're for it is because they think that, or they think that the retribution, that, you know, a life for a life. But when you think about, like, this is torturous. When you are on death row, you are by yourself 24 hours a day. You are in a tiny cell, a tinier cell. I mean, it is beyond the suffering that we inflict on prisoners of war, like on the victims of who are in Guantanamo Bay. A lot of them received similar treatment to these prisoners. When it comes to like waterboarding and that kind of torture, That's not happening in our prison system, but other things are deprivation. Light and sleep deprivation is something that happens a lot on death row. People scream. It's incredibly loud. You can't sleep. It's torturous. And forcing some, I just, the morality of it is questionable at best. But when you look at just how ineffectual it is, it's not a deterrent. It has never been a deterrent. Violent crime doesn't go down when we kill people. And West Virginia, actually, one of the things that we'll talk about next week, the West Virginia legislature has just put forward a bill to bring back the death penalty in West Virginia. I know that Republicans in North Carolina are working on that. You know, it just seems like this backwards movement in justice.
Oh, it is. It is. It's terrible, too. I mean, we've got an over-incarceration problem in this country, just in general. We don't know how to address criminal justice whatsoever. And so when it comes to stuff like this where there's a horrific crime, this does nothing. Mm-hmm. It just, all it does is it's a political play for the people who want to look tough on crime. That's pretty much all it is. And it satisfies some people's emotional need for closure and for an eye for an eye. Yeah. And that's not enough to me to justify capital murder.
Yeah.
Or capital punishment.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you. And one of the reasons that they had to switch to this method, which I didn't address in the beginning, but the reason that they couldn't do lethal injection is that it's getting harder and harder to find the drugs to do lethal injection because they're made overseas in countries that have banned capital punishment. And so they now have laws that they won't sell them to the state, or they won't sell them to like correctional institutions looking to kill people. So they actually have people working on this saying, well, if we can't get lethal injection drugs, what's the best way to kill someone in a very sterile environment? I think that we moved away from hangings and firing squads because it's messy and the public doesn't want to feel like they are the same as that person. But what we're really doing is sanitizing murder. You strap someone, it's very medical almost, but doctors are not allowed to participate. That's something people don't know. When these people are laying on the gurney fighting for their life for 22 minutes in clear and obvious pain, there's no doctor there because doctors can't be involved. I mean, there's so many layers to why this is wrong. And it's just the fact that they're looking for better, easier, more efficient ways to kill people is so disgusting to me. It's not a practice we should be partaking in.
No, it is not. And I can't remember if you mentioned this, but he is the first person in the world executed using nitrogen gas.
Yeah.
That's absurd. Well, I don't know what to say other than I think that our humanity is always being tested, and more so now than ever with stuff like this. And it's just, I don't know. It doesn't sit well with me. I know it's hard to find sympathy for people that senselessly murder others. But it's not really a sympathy for them. It's about what types of powers we want our government to have.
Yeah.
And this is not one of them for me.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sorry to end on that note.
Yeah. Well, it's been kind of a heavy episode. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least we've brought some humor to it, I hope.
I think so.
Bleak times, man. Bleak times.
But we're here with you, struggling through it.
Yeah, we'll struggle together. Don't worry. We'll be here. We'll be
but
here
in
every,
the struggle, we won't cut off any hands.
No, no, definitely not. Definitely not. We're not like the Bible.
It's the best place to
end. Don't ban it.
Don't ban the Bible.
That's right. Yeah, we don't cut hands off. We're going to end it on that. You're right. We'll be back next week. Thank you all for listening. The views expressed on this show are just opinions from Callie and Chuck. They are not representative of the opinions of either of their employers, and they never will be. These are just our opinions on this show. That is it.